Hey y'all, Darius Rucker here. You know, a lot of people ask me, what inspires your music? And one of the big things is a strong sense of place. That's why I love my home state of South Carolina and want to share the awesome things it has to offer. From the beautiful mountains down to the sunny coast, it's got it all. Not to mention two of my personal favorites, great golf and amazing food. Come see why I love this place. Visit discoversouthcarolina.com.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Levi's, Plow & Hearth, Adidas, Sephora, and Neiman Marcus. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. And it's easy to use. And you get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's Rakuten. Rakuten.com.
Welcome to another episode of Textory. Textory is a podcast about history, about historical texts. We read historical tea, letters, diaries, all that stuff, and we react to it. Do check out my Patreon at patreon.com/textory, because that's the way you can support the podcast. Make sure I'm still going, because it's hard, you guys. No, just kidding, it's not that bad. But, you know, I'm not really making any money off of the podcast, so it's a nice appreciation. Anyway, today's episode I'm really excited about, because I have to say it was one of the most surprising texts from that era that I have ever read. I have not read much stuff from the 16th century, but I definitely did not expect it to be like this. It's insane. Without further ado, today we're talking about Moderata Fonte. Moderata was born in Venice in 1555, and not only is she such an interesting figure, also Venice at the time is such a fascinating place and time that it's definitely something I want to research more, but my lack of knowledge of Italian is kind of blocking me from that. But Venice in the 16th century was booming. It was a place that was well renowned for not only its culture, its politics, its society, wealth, and on top of that, obviously all of the trading that went on. Not to mention, Venice as a city is such a fascinating place, like physically, just the way it's located. So it's just so mysterious. And Moderata was also not like your average girl. She was an orphan who was brought up at a convent, and she was later taken to her grandmother's. She came from a wealthy family. You could say it was like Venice's elite. She was just very talented. She was a brilliant child. She was hungry for knowledge. She was self-educated. And she published her first written work at the age of 26, which I think not only is incredible, even for a person that young, but for a person that young being a woman and being in the 16th century Venice is just so incredible. Obviously, it helped that she's rich and influential, but I think it's still an achievement. So her first published work was a romance called Floridoro. And a year later, she marries a government lawyer, and her family soon grows. She becomes a mother to three children, and her career is sort of put on hold. And it always makes me wonder, you know, how many women in the past and present were or are forced to do that, because not only did they not receive any support, it was just seen as improper for a mother to engage in any sort of creative work. So, as I said, obviously it still happens nowadays where a mother feels like she has to choose between family and career, and that shouldn't be the case. I mean, she should be allowed to focus solely on her children if that's what she wants, but it shouldn't be like this requirement that she needs to stay home. Anyway, I'm assuming that some of her thoughts come from that, and her thoughts are very unusual for the era. And you can feel the resentment. You can feel the rage. This book she wrote when she was already like a stay-at-home mom. It's incredible because it's a fictionalized work. It's a dialogue between characters. So you can't really say, oh, that was her views. Because there's many characters. You don't know which views she actually agreed with, if any. But there is so much rage and resentment coming through the pages of this that I'm just like, she would not come up with these if those had not crossed her mind. Which I think is, I mean, you have to hear it for yourself because I'm still, my jaw's on the floor. So the book is called The Merits of Women, wherein is revealed their nobility and their superiority to men. Which the title itself is like, how did she even publish that in that era? It was published in 1592. And the book is about a group of women who are friends who meet together and have a massive discussion about men, basically. It was very common to write works like that in a form of a dialogue because that was borrowed from the classical writers and philosophers. So that was very customary. What is not customary is like what they're actually saying. So let's just begin. In this truly divine city, there was once, not long ago, a group of noble and spirited women, all from the most respected families of the city, who, despite their great differences in age and marital status, were so united by breeding and taste that a tender bond of friendship has formed between them. These women would often steal time together for a quiet conversation, and on these occasions, safe from any fear of being spied on by men or constrained by their presence, they would speak freely on whatever subject they pleased. She then describes the arrival of 7 women, and they range from an elderly widow, her daughter, an older married woman, a young married woman, a single woman. So it's a variety of women of different ages, and not status because they're all rich, but a situation. And they found out that one of them, a young widow, Leonora, had recently inherited a house with a very lovely garden. So they just met in the garden to chill. But as it happened, a discussion soon broke out because one of them was recently married. "When I think about it," said Helena, "I'm not sure I can say yet whether I'm happy or not. I greatly enjoy my husband's company, but there is one thing about him that dismays me a little. He is quite insistent that I should not leave the house, whereas I long for nothing more than to go to all the weddings and banquets to which I am invited." And they start discussing whether that's good or bad. So someone tells a joke, and then Cornelia, which is like the most feisty one, she says, "Praise God that we are free to do just as we please, even tell jokes like that to make each other laugh, with no one here to criticize us or put us down." "Exactly," said Leonora. "If a man could hear us now, laughing together like this, how he would scoff. There'd be no end to it." "To tell the truth," said Lucretia, "we are only ever really happy when we are alone with other women. And the best thing that can happen to any woman is to be able to live alone without the company of men." Which again, this is 1592, my friends. This is pretty revolutionary views for the time. Meanwhile, realizing that the sun had retreated behind some little clouds, they all agreed to go down and enjoy the lovely garden for a while. When they got to the garden, words could not express how utterly charming they found it. There were the loveliest orange trees and lemon trees to be seen, with such sweet-smelling flowers and fruit that they gladdened the heart with their scent as much as they delighted the eyes. What I would not give to be able to see a 16th century Venetian garden, just experience it to myself, like an actual one. And I'm wearing a Venetian gown and eating oranges. But then I read a book like that and I'm like, you know what? I'm good. So they basically asked Leonora, who is the young widow, why she's not remarrying. "It's a pity that you don't think of remarrying, Leonora, young and lovely as you are." "Remarrying, eh?" replied Leonora. "I'd rather drown than submit again to a man. I have just escaped from servitude and suffering, and you're asking me to go back again of my own free will and get tangled up in all that again? God preserve me. First, I must remind you that this house, together with this garden, belonged to an aunt of mine. This aunt, from the time she was a girl, was resolved never to marry, and so, on the good income she inherited from my grandfather, she transformed this garden into the beautiful state in which you see it now. So they retire in the shade and they're having fun, but they're also like, okay, let's do something fun. Let's choose a game. And then they're like, what if instead of a game, we have a discussion on a subject? And then they're like, okay, who's going to decide on the subject? So they choose the oldest of them. The oldest of them, Adriana, decides on the subject and she says, I have decided, since you have been doing nothing all day but talking about men and complaining about them, that our conversation this afternoon should be on that very same subject. So I hereby give Leonora the task of speaking as much evil of them as she can, and Corina and Cornelia can join in and take her side. And since I have the impression that Helena is so captivated by the charms of her new husband that she has some leanings towards the male camp, I give her leave to speak in defense of men, if she so wishes, and she may have Virginia and Lucretia as her companions. So this is all kind of a decoy to the fact that these are actual views of women at the time. It's like, what if we make it into a game and you have to speak as badly of men as you can because it's a game and then you win. But what actually happens is Corina and Cornelia do not sound like they're playing a game. So Corina goes off. Corina's waiting for this moment. She loves the game. She says, without help from their wives, men are just like unlit lamps. In themselves, they are no good for anything, but when lit, they can be handy to have around the house. In other words, if a man has some virtues, it is because he has picked them up from the woman he lives with, whether mother, nurse, sister, or wife, for over time, inevitably, some of her good qualities will rub off on him. If it is true what you say, said Virginia at this point, and if men are as imperfect as you say they are, then why are they our superiors on every count? And Corina goes off again. When it's said that women must be subject to men, the phrase should be understood in the same sense as when we say that we are subject to natural disasters, diseases, and all the other accidents of this life. It's not a case of being subject in the sense of obeying, but rather of suffering and imposition. But they take the phrase in the contrary sense and set themselves up as tyrants over us, arrogantly usurping that dominion over women that they claim is their right, but which is more properly ours. And Lucretia disagrees. Yet you know full well that men were created before us and that we stand in need of their help. You yourself confess it. Men were created before women, Corina replied, but that doesn't prove their superiority. Rather, it proves ours. For they were born out of the lifeless earth in order that we could then be born out of living flesh. I mean, in the biblical sense, that's a very hot take. In short, we were created as men's helpmates, their companions, their joy, and their crowning glory, but men, though they know full well how much women are worth and how great the benefits we bring them, nonetheless seek to destroy us out of envy for our merits. We are not speaking ill of them out of envy, Leonora said, but out of respect for the truth. For if a man steals, he must be called a thief. If men usurp our rights, should we not complain and declare that they have wronged us? For if we are their inferiors in status but not in worth, this is an abuse that has been introduced into the world and that men have then, over time, gradually translated into law and custom. See, that's what I meant. I can't believe how modern this text is, how it touches on the very basis of feminism and patriarchy. And it's just, it's incredible to me that A, it was written in the 16th century and B, it was published in the 16th century. But perhaps they all do this through ignorance, Virginia said. And not because they wish us any ill. Cornelia absolutely disagrees. Now you really sound like the naive little creature you are, Cornelia replied. Just think of all the assassinations, usurpations, perjuries, the blasphemy, gaming, gluttony, and other such vicious deeds they commit all the time. As fathers, as brothers, as sons, or husbands, or lovers, or whatever other relationship they have to us, they all abuse us, humiliate us, and do all they can to harm and annihilate us. You have not mentioned all those, said Leonora, whose cruelty toward their daughters have been such that they have wretchedly deprived them of their honor or their life. That is something I can't agree with, said Helena. and I don't want to hear you trying to make too much capital out of it. For my father has shown me every regard, and in a spirit of true paternal love, has seen to it that I was married and married extremely well. But you have no father yourself, and that is the reason why you are taking such a desperate line. Why does it sound like she's like, Leonora, that's fatherless behavior? There are others who are lucky enough to be left a dowry by their father, but who then find themselves imprisoned in the home like slaves by their brothers. And so the poor things have no choice but to grow old at home under their brother's rule. But Lucretia, who had been married by her brothers, could not suffer Cornelia to go on any longer and interjected almost angrily, "You are wrong, Cornelia. There are also loving brothers who treat their sisters better than they would their own daughters." "Are you not aware," replied Cornelia, "that God on occasion performs miracles?" Why is this so funny? I mean, it's also very harsh because they're like, obviously the rage is speaking. So it's like, all men are bad. All men are evil. At that point, Adriana, the queen, so they refer to her as the queen because she's the oldest, spoke almost with tears in her eyes. "Ah, but Cornelia, if you had had the son it pleased the Lord to give me and then to take away from me, I am not sure whether you would speak in the same way. For he was an angel of goodness, nothing at all like his father, who was a cruel husband to me." But at that point, Cornelia, interrupting their argument, continued, "Women who are married, or martyred, more accurately, have endless sources of misery. First, there are those husbands who keep their wives on so tight a leash that they almost object to the air itself coming near them, so that the poor things, thinking that by marrying they are winning for themselves a certain womanly freedom to enjoy some respectable pastimes, find themselves more constricted than ever before, shut up like animals within four walls and subjected to a hateful guardian rather than an affectionate husband." "You might add that there are some men," said Leonora, "who convince themselves that being so jealous and making life so unpleasant for their wives is the best way to keep them in line. Little do they know, poor fools, that their wives, seeing how little they are respected and how little faith their husbands have in them, finish up behaving as badly as they can. And truly, there is no better guardian of a woman's honor than her own will and resolve." "I have a fear that my own husband may turn out to be one of these jealous and brooding types," said Helena, "for he is already showing signs of it." But Cornelia mentions that it's even worse when a guy completely neglects his wife and then falls in love with, like, a sex worker or someone. "That's just what my first husband was like, my dear," the queen interrupted. "I was young and regarded as one of the beauties of this city, but he showed no interest in me at all. And after 2 years, he fell in love with a prostitute. Perhaps she had cast some kind of spell on him so that he couldn't help himself," Lucretia suggested. "That won't wash," Cornelia replied. "Believe me, all that talk about magic spells is just words. Men do what they do because they want to." Cornelia then has a long rant on young lovers. So Helena is like, okay, are older lovers a little better? Can't we trust older men at least when they appear to love faithfully? "We can trust them even less than those I've been talking about," Cornelia replied, "for their experience has taught them not to love more truly, but rather to deceive more effectively. These men never really take a woman into their ungrateful hearts. When they meet a woman, they pretend to be her slave and to love her desperately, but at the same time, they are laying down traps for every woman they see, trying out each one in turn, deceiving them all, saying the same words to each and laying down the same nets." "My dear Cornelia," said Virginia, "what you're saying is sowing confusion throughout the whole kingdom of love. What of all the famous stories of lovers in the past? Haven't you read about all those countless men who have died for the great love they have borne for women?" "Do you really believe," Cornelia replied, "that everything historians tell us about men or about women is actually true? You ought to consider the fact that these histories have been written by men." I mean, she has a point. She has a point. Literature up to a certain point was extremely, and still is in some cases, male-centered, and we rarely get to hear the female perspective. And back then, it was even more of an issue. "So we should love no one, since no man loves truly," said Virginia. "Is that what you're saying?" "I don't mean to imply that there are no exceptions," replied Cornelia, "just as I acknowledged in the case of fathers, brothers, sons, and husbands. But what I do say is that those who love truly are so rare that they are lost among the vast hordes of false lovers, and it is extremely difficult to pick them out. This mirrors so many conversations I had with my friends about online dating, about modern dating, about how you just need to weed out the bad eggs and find a really nice guy. And they are somewhere, but they're hidden behind all the psychos that you end up seeing. Nothing has changed. I mean, I see it again and again and again on this podcast, but especially when it comes to human interactions and human relations. The man who loves from the depths of his heart, desires nothing, hopes for nothing, and demands nothing except to be loved in return. He keeps within the bounds of decency, stands in awe of the woman he loves her in her presence, praises her in her absence, interests himself not only in her, but in everything that concerns her, as though it were his own business. This is actually quite beautiful, like, I'm gonna frame this. Then they have an interesting discussion about shameless women, so women who were basically sexually active without being in a relationship, or that were sex workers. And they mentioned that why is shame associated with those women and not the men that use those women? Despite that, these women, wretched as they are, preserve a little more dignity than the men they consort with, because at least they aren't the ones paying the men. And again, this is like hearing a 16th century echo of modern sentiments about women having OnlyFans profiles and men paying for those services. That whole industry exists because men are the users primarily. So why are women being shamed for what men are paying for? Oh, come now, Cornelia dearest, said Lucretia. You're not trying to tell us that vice is goodness. But when you hear men talking, said Cornelia, all they ever do is speak ill of women. Did you know what such and such a woman is up to with such and such a man? And the other one, what a whore, what a slut. I'd never have believed it. She seemed like such a saint. And they can keep up these curses and insults all day without once looking down at themselves and seeing that they may need to take some of the blame. Again, that's literally the discourse around sex workers online, is always blaming the workers for what they do and not the people that require or use their services or access their content for money. It's literally the same. And this is 16th century. And another quote that I think speaks directly to what we are hearing nowadays. When a man has amorous concourse with a woman, the result is the greatest shame for her and a certain amount of credit and praise for him. So that the woman always tries to disguise it as much as possible, while the man cannot wait to tell the whole world about it, as though his glory and happiness depended on it. That could have been written yesterday, literally. Then there is something about discriminating girls as children or babies. When a father is told that his child is a girl, he is put out and dismayed and gets angry with his wife. What malice there is in all this. Men should be delighted at the birth of a daughter who will grow up meek and quiet and look after them and their households with devotion and love. But instead, they long for the birth of males who, when they grow up, will squander their money and swagger around looking for trouble. Valid? I mean, back then, rich men were definitely not focused on their parents. They wanted to conquer the world. This is the end of the first part of the text. We're moving on to the second part.
Hey y'all, Darius Rucker here. You know, a lot of people ask me, what inspires your music? And one of the big things is a strong sense of place. That's why I love my home state of South Carolina and want to share the awesome things it has to offer. From the beautiful mountains down to the sunny coast, it's got it all. Not to mention two of my personal favorites, great golf and amazing food. Come see why I love this place. Visit discoversouthcarolina.com.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Levi's, Plow and Hearth, Adidas, Sephora, and Neiman Marcus. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. And it's easy to use. And you get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers. And Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's Rakuten. Rakuten.com.
So basically, this is like the second day of their discussion. They have returned home, got some sleep, and returned back to the garden. The fresh rosy dawn had already made her appearance at the windows of the east, and the rest of the sky was white and blue, bathed in the purest of light. So Adriana and her daughter and the other women in their own houses, having risen and dressed in happy anticipation, all climbed into their gondolas and headed for Leonora's house, which they all reached at almost the same time. When Leonora had greeted them with her usual affectionate courtesy, the queen said to her, "So, Leonora, you must be impressed at how well we have kept yesterday's promise. We promised to come and have breakfast with you, but in fact, we'd arrived almost in time to join you in bed. It's certainly true that if we'd stayed here last night, there'd have been no need to carry on today," said Cornelia. "We'd have carried on chattering away, and we wouldn't have slept a wink, so we'd have finished today's conversation already overnight." I have to say, I find this so cute. The fact that sleepovers, girly sleepovers, were already a thing back then, and they always looked the same. It was just a yap session and complaining about life, and those really heartfelt discussions in the middle of the night, followed by crying from laughing. I don't know, there's something really cute about that. Then Corina starts talking. "The question you put to me yesterday, Lucretia, was a very important one. Your question was, why it should be that even though men are a thoroughly bad lot, many women, decent, sensible women, still love them very deeply. My reply is that there are three different causes at work here. We need to make a distinction first between the different manners in which women may love men. A first case is when their love is sensual in nature, and they are enticed by that love into committing illicit acts. The root cause in cases like this is women's naivety and their wish to satisfy the desires of the men they love, a weakness which is the only real defect of our sex. But even in the case of family affection and friendship, where sexual attraction is not involved, women may be fully aware of the evil nature of the men they love without ceasing to cherish and care for them. And the cause in that case is women's overwhelming natural charity and goodness, which can be compared to that divine mercy which lavishes love and concern on all creatures, however much they may offend it and however little they return its love. Finally, apart from these natural causes, many women's love, whether sensual or affectionate, proceeds from the influence of the stars." What I find really funny is they discuss like literal astrology for like a couple of pages, and then, "Oh, come along now," Leonora interjected. "Forgive me, but you're breaking all the rules here. We're supposed to be discussing what's wrong with men, and all you want to talk about is moons and clouds and birds and all that nonsense. Now, if you want an example of something unstable, why not talk about men?" Astrology girlies in 16th century. "Men like to compare us to magpies," said Helena, "because we are always chattering." "And to which birds might we compare them?" asked Cornelia. "To the crows we mentioned earlier," said Leonora, "because when we see them, we know it means ill fortune for us." I find it interesting because Leonora on day two is like, at this point, her views have shifted. Her attitude has changed. She's no longer defending men in the discussion. They start discussing whether or not it's possible to change men. "Couldn't we come up with some kind of remedy to improve them a little? If you have wine in the house that has gone off, if you mix in some good wine, it very often improves it. If you have a ragged old dress, you can mend it so it passes as new. And unappetizing dishes can be improved by adding butter and spices." "Dearest sister," said Leonora, "I wouldn't know where to start to try to disguise the taste of these rotten men. They are like mature trees that have laid down roots. They are incapable of change." "But even with trees," said Corina, "it's possible to change their nature by grafting them. But I'm not so sure about men. They never really change their ways, except from bad to worse. It would be more of a miracle if men improved, said Cornelia, and started producing good effects from their bad nature, than the strangest freak of nature one could think of, like birds being born out of trees. Then the discussion changes direction to miracles and weird things in the world that are God's creation. The eldest of them, the queen, says, "In how many different ways divine providence works to provide for our needs?" And Leonora concludes, "Another thing this proves is how little gratitude we owe to men and what a disservice they do us. For all things were created for their benefit and ours, and in fact men themselves were created specifically to help us in life. And yet they do their job far worse than trees and other irrational creatures which never fail in their duties." After that, we have several pages of medicinal discussions, which I'm going to pass on because that's not viable medicinal knowledge. But don't you realize that it's already past 3 o'clock and we still haven't started? That's what Leonora said. What have the kind of things we've been talking about got to do with us, may I ask? Are we doctors by any chance? Leave it up to them to talk about syrups and poultices and all that kind of thing. It's absurd for us to be talking about them. You're quite wrong, said Lucretia. On the contrary, it's good for us to learn about these things, so we can look after ourselves without needing help from men. In fact, it would be a good thing if there were women who knew about medicine, so men couldn't boast about their superiority in this field and we didn't have to be dependent on them. Again, how come we're still having this discussion when it comes to women's access to healthcare? This is 16th century. We've now talked all about the stars, the air, birds, rivers, fish, all kinds of animals, plants and herbs, Cornelia said, and we still haven't found anything with the power to work a change in men's minds and make them respect us and love us as we deserve. If only men could be moved by force of words, said Leonora. If they could, I'd try my hand at a public oration in the demonstrative genre. I'd shower them with praise and lavish every term of affection I knew on them, if only I thought it would work. And then the rest of the girls encourage her to make a speech. They're like, okay, what if you were to address men and give them a speech about everything that we've talked about and to ask them to change their ways, what would you say? Leonora began. Dearest and most cherished menfolk, so prudent are you and so warm in your affections that I am confident that you will lend your ears to the one who speaks on behalf of all women, on a subject that touches profoundly on the interests of all of us. The case is this, that you men have until now been so much our enemies as to have devoted yourselves to oppressing and abusing us with all the words and actions that lie in your power. For, to begin, you know full well that we were born with the same substance and qualities as you, and that we were given to you as companions in this life, not as slaves. And you are also quite aware that because of our humble and unselfish nature, and because of the love we bear you, we serve you and follow you, and are respectful, obedient, patient, and utterly faithful and devoted to you, accompanying you throughout life and even to the tomb. So, dearest, dearest men, what reason can you have for not loving us? Loving fathers, what possible cause can there be for your favoring your male over your female offspring? And you, cherished brothers, why are you so cruel to your sisters? Why do you fail to care for them? And you, beloved sons, why do you show such little regard to your mothers who have suffered so much for you? You came from our wombs and drank our milk, first nutriment, at our breasts, and we have spent so much effort in raising you, suffering endless labors and travails. Come, in the name of our blood, which is in you, and of the labors we so willingly endured in order to nurture you, teach you manners, guard you from every danger, in short, to make you the men you are today, can you not show us some compassion, some respect? Do not despise us. Do not abandon us. Consider that if you are now men, it is because we are women. And you, darling, darling husbands, pray do not hold your poor wives in contempt. You know full well that you are one flesh with us, and that only death can sever you from our companionship. Why then do you abandon us? Why do you so often strip us of all our worldly goods? Why do you fail to cherish us, as is your duty? We have made you judges of the case, even though you are one of the parties. We have submitted ourselves entirely to your decision. Now we beg and beseech you listen to justice and pass sentence against yourselves. Though in fact this sentence would rather be in your favor. Pass it, O men, and you will find yourselves happier with every new day. Grant our requests, and you will remove any cause for further resentment on our part, so that we can live out that short space of life that the Lord has given us, loving one another and living together in peace, charity, and love. Leonora's listeners enjoyed this speech of hers immensely, and it was a long while before their laughter died down afterward. Then the queen said, "Well, Leonora, you certainly go down very well presenting your case among us women, since we are all on your side anyway. But I'm not sure how much success you'd have persuading the men." I thought it's a very deep monologue, so I find it interesting that the women were just laughing at it because they knew they would never ever have an opportunity to present it before actual men. Then they started discussing fashion. They just started talking about fashion, which is, again, a thing you and your girlfriends would probably do, except it's 16th century. But the fun discussion doesn't last long because Cornelia says, "If men could hear us talking about these things, how'd they mock us? As it is, they're always saying that it's the only thing we're interested in, preening ourselves and making ourselves beautiful." "Oh, let them say what they want," said Corina. "It's not such an insult anyway, for the refinement and neatness of our appearance is a sign of the nobility of our soul. But then there are all those other women who throw away enormous amounts of time in preening themselves," said the queen. "In fact, I remember when I was young, it was a consuming interest of mine, trying to look beautiful. Though I have the impression that nowadays, women dress up more extravagantly than ever, and there are all these striking new fashions. It's not unfitting for us women to express our natural inner refinement outwardly, in feminine dress and adornment," said Corina. "Of course, men say that all this finery we wear betrays a corrupt heart underneath and often endangers our virtue, but they're quite wrong. Women's dress could hardly endanger their virtue if men would only stop pestering them. And to prove it, just think how frequent it is to see women of low estate importuned by men and coming to grief, in spite of the fact that they dress plainly and without any form of adornment. It is far rarer to see gentlewomen suffering the same fate, in spite of all their finery, for they aren't dressing up for any vicious reason, but simply out of a spirit of gaiety and to follow the custom of the city." "While we're on the subject," added Leonora, "men often refuse to allow their women to learn to read and write, on the pretext that learning is the downfall of many women. As though the pursuit of virtue, which is where learning leads, led straight to its contrary, vice. What they don't see is that what you just said about women dressing up can be said with even more justice about their acquiring an education. For it's obvious that an ignorant person is far more liable to fall into error than someone intelligent and well-read. And we see from experience that far more unlettered women slide into vice than educated women who have exercised their minds. How many illiterate maidservants, how many peasant girls and plebeian women give in to their lovers without putting up much of a fight? And the reason is that they are more gullible than women like us, who have read our cautionary tales and learned our moral lessons and developed a love for virtue." Okay, they're basically talking about sex education, aren't they? That if there is no sex education, there will be unwanted pregnancies and there will be women basically ruining their lives in that era because they did not know the consequences of what they were doing. "It really is something," said Cornelia at this point, "that men disapprove even of our doing things that are patently good. Wouldn't it be possible for us just to banish these men from our lives and escape their carping and jeering once and for all? Couldn't we live without them? Couldn't we earn our own living and manage our affairs without help from them? Come on, let's wake up and claim back our freedom and the honor and dignity they have usurped from us for so long. Do you think that if we really put our minds to it, we would be lacking the courage to defend ourselves, the strength to fend for ourselves, or the talents to earn our own living? Let's take our courage into our hands and do it, and then we can leave it up to them to mend their ways as much as they can. We shan't really care what the outcome is, just as long as we are no longer subjugated to them. And then, having achieved equality, we'll be in a sufficiently strong position to mock them as they now mock us. We'll have a..." I go quite emotional, not gonna lie. Because this is this is like their dream, to be able to be equal, to be able to do all these things. And we're just basically doing it. We're so used to the fact that we can speak our mind, we can speak up, and we just have all that handed on a plate. And we just keep forgetting the thousands of years of work of other women that it took. That it took books like this one. It took so much fight for us to be able to be where we are. And reading monologues like this one, it just hits you. How many generations of women before you have dreamt of being where we are right now? And we'll have a thing or two to say about how they spend 1,000 years combing and setting the few paltry hairs they have on their heads and their chins, and how they wear their cravats so long and drooping 1 minute that they can easily be taken for napkins or kerchiefs, or how they sometimes wear their breeches so tight with their long doublets that they look like frogs, and sometimes wear them so loose that they could easily jump around inside them. And what's more, many of them have now taken to wearing platform shoes almost as high as the ones they are always criticizing women for wearing. There are endless more silly fashions and crazes of theirs, far too many to go into. You make me laugh, said Helena, with all this talk about how men jeer at us for our concern with dress. That's not my impression. What they would find ridiculous, I'd think, is hearing us talk about some of the things we've been discussing today, which they think only men should talk about. As for clothes and beauty, they don't mind us being interested in them, because they see them as women's proper concern. Corina did not like that. Corina said, well, they shouldn't find anything to laugh at in our having discussed various different subjects either. For one thing, we've talked about them just casually and in passing, not because we consider ourselves experts. And for another, we have just as much right to speak about these subjects as they have. And if we were educated properly as girls, we'd outstrip men's performance in any science or art you care to name. Well, that's it, said Virginia. I heard so many fine things about men yesterday and today that I'm beginning to feel almost converted to the position of Leonora and her companions. They've made me inclined to think I'd prefer not to submit myself to any man when I could be living in peace and liberty alone. Don't say that, daughter dear, said the queen, because I have no choice but to find a husband for you. But I do promise that when the time comes, I'll keep searching until I find a companion with whom you'll be able to live happily, for I shall strive to find someone noble, sensible, and virtuous, rather than someone rich, spoiled, and unreliable. Oh, but please, mother dearest, said Virginia, I'll be much happier staying with you. What if he turned out to be a proud and arrogant man? What would I do then? Just imagine what will happen if I don't marry you off. You'll still have to stay within 4 walls a day and dress soberly, without any of the finery and fripperies you're allowed now, because that's what happens to young girls who don't want to get married. And what's more, you'll be deprived of that companionship that could be the joy of your life. Well, I say it's better to be happy alone than unhappy with your companion, said Corina. And I said Lucretia, that even admitting that men are as flawed as we've been saying, with things the way they are in the world, it's still preferable to have their protection and company than to be without it. For we poor women are constantly being assailed and abused and cheated out of our money, our honor, our lives. So it seems better to have 1 man at least as a friend to defend us from the others than to live alone with every man against us. And if by some chance, as sometimes happens, one's husband is a good man, then it's impossible to imagine how happy a woman's life can be living with such a man in an inseparable companionship that lasts until death. And so, dearest girl, you shouldn't lose heart, for you have no way of knowing yet what kind of future God has prepared for you. It's certainly true, said Leonora, that since men are rotten for the most part, women should do what our queen says and put their energies into seeking out that quality in husbands, which is hardest to find and yet ultimately the most important, goodness. I haven't been speaking out of any hatred for men, but rather in a spirit of charity and moved by the compassion I feel for the many suffering women I see around me. If they could be persuaded of their error, they might just change their ways. So I don't feel that men would have any cause to be offended by what I've said, even if I had spoken publicly in their presence. With that, the women arose from their seats, for the sun was on the point of setting. And as they walked through the garden in the cool of the evening, Corina and Virginia started singing a madrigal. If the stars adorn the heavens, so too women adorn the world, with all that is lovely and pleasant in it. And just as no mortal can live without a soul and a heart, so men cannot get by without women. For woman is man's heart, soul, and life. When they had finished, the women all took leave of one another and went off to their respective homes. This is the end of the book. Shout out to Virginia Cox, who has, I think, translated this and edited this book from Italian. I did not expect to get emotional over this one. I mean, we have read plenty of feminist texts, but it was just this longing for freedom that really got to me. Just the way it was expressed. And it was like in a tone of, if it ever happens one day. Like they didn't even dare to dream for so long. So yeah, let me know what you think. I think some of those were pretty harsh. There was a lot of generalizing. There was a lot of all men do this, all men are like this, all men do that. But in general, I think what to me really stands out in this one is the fact that I don't think these are all her opinions. She clearly has spoken to a lot of women at the time. You can tell these are the conversations that she had. You can tell these are views of several different women. I know she's also probably just a very good writer and she was able to create different characters. But I was even thinking about the fact that she mentioned sons being ungrateful when they grow up and not respecting their mothers. Her children were not grown up at the time. She must have heard it from someone else. So it could have been a discussion that she had with a friend who had older children or older sons. And that's what kind of tipped me off to the fact that maybe it's the views of all of her friends combined into one. Maybe it's the frustrations of all of the women that she knew. Maybe it's her maid complaining about her husband. Maybe it's her family. Maybe it's what she observed, because obviously she was a great observer, since she was able to like compile it all in one text. So absolutely incredible. If you have a chance to read the whole thing, please do. I hope I managed to sneak in the most interesting parts, but obviously I had to leave some of it out. Such a cool read. Such a cool read, honestly. Anyway, do check out my Patreon at patreon.com/textory if you want to support the podcast, and I'll hear you in another episode. Bye.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.